Okay, we'll meditate. Then first, please follow your breath. Then please come to the present moment. Split off a small piece of your mind from the back. And let that piece of your mind watch the rest of your mind think thoughts and see what thoughts the mind is thinking as you watch. Don't be in the thoughts. Watch the mind thinking the thoughts from the outside. Then place an invisible wall in front of your mind. Try not to allow any thoughts of later, after tonight. Don't think about tomorrow or next week. Bring the mind back to this place and this time without thinking of the future. Now block any thoughts of the past. Thinking about yesterday or this morning. And try to bring the mind to the present moment in this room with these other friends. Keep the mind here in the present. And please ask your heart teacher to come and sit with you. Now, I'd like you to imagine that your heart teacher is sitting next to you and on your left and not across from you. So you're both facing the same direction. Please bring your mind to the spot between your eyebrows, up about an inch, and then about half an inch or a little bit more into the skull, inside the skull. Focus your mind there. You will feel a place where if you hold your mind there, your concentration changes. Your eyes might turn up, but don't force it. That place in you and that place in your teacher are joined together. You're sitting next to each other, but those two places are as one. Bring your mind to the chakra between your legs, about an inch into your body. Feel that spot. And it's connected to the spot, same spot on your teacher who's sitting next to you. Now feel the flow of energy up and down your spine as you breathe in and out between those two spots. As the breath comes in or out, you feel an energy like liquid glass moving between the two spots in your body, and at the same time, they are moving in your heart lama's body in unison. then please don't think you're sitting on the ground or on the floor. Take your mind up to the sky, blue sky, higher and higher, until you reach the end of the blue sky and the darkness of space begins, and you are sitting with your teacher above the world, sitting on the edge of the atmosphere itself, looking down at this beautiful blue world as you feel the stream of liquid glass moving in your two bodies in unison. And lastly, feel that you and your teacher together are trying to match the breath and the flow of liquid glass in the bodies along the spines of every living being below you, below the sky, on the face of the earth. Then you and your teacher together are trying to give more strength and energy to every living creature below. Silver energy is flowing along the spines of people and birds, small insects, ants, fish. It's coming from the strength of your own energy and your teacher's energy. You're giving life itself to an entire world of beings and sustaining their life with your life and your teacher's life. And please ask your teacher to come into your heart. Stay there with you. And come back to your breath, your gross breath. And then when you're ready, you can open your eyes. Take a good stretch. We'll do a little bit of text, and Deyang Shalungi Chigun Duba Thogyuki Gyutsuni Gongsa Gyawang Ngapa Chogne Jambel Shalungyepala Tsevdak Papte. So we've been tracing the lineages of this particular style of teaching. We started basically with Lord Buddha 2,500 years ago. We spent a lot of time on Lord Atisha 1,000 years ago. We spent a little bit of time on Tsongkhapa 4 centuries later. And then we've sort of been tracing now the lineages that came down to us from Tsongkhapa in the last 600 years, okay? Then that's all, this whole retreat, the text has only been to learn where these teachings came from. So before we start them, okay, like you should know where they come from, right? And then I think they sort of trick you. They tell you they're just telling you the history of where the teaching came from, but in the process, you end up hearing many examples of how a spiritual life can be led successfully. And you learn, I think we learn about struggles and hardships, finding a teacher. We read that people gave their lives to find their teacher. And then we heard that the teachers themselves, you know, they also had challenges, especially during their training, in the years of their training, risked their lives, and many disappointments, many hardships. And so really it's not just a list of who taught whom for the last 100 generations. It's the process is supposed to teach us something. The process of talking about it is supposed to teach us something. Sooner or later you realize that many people have given their lives and have risked their lives and have devoted their entire lives to assure that it comes to you in an unbroken stream. So many people died to bring these teachings to us, to preserve them for us. And then I think if you really get it, if you get what we've been talking about all week, you begin to feel a sense of responsibility, or a sense that something has been entrusted to you. You thought you were just going away for a week. Now you're stuck with this, like, 100 generations. Are you going to be the one that breaks it, you know? Are you going to be the one who doesn't pass it on, you know? So maybe you got more than you... what do you call it? Bargain for. Yeah, yeah. So that's the reason. I think a big part of the reason why they spend so much time describing how these teachings came down to us is that it engenders in you a sense of responsibility for making sure that it doesn't die out on your watch, right? And then I was thinking today, I forgot to tell you earlier, I was thinking... now that you can talk, what's really fun, and we did this last time. We had the meditation poster last retreat. We taught the poster, and then I asked if people would teach it. And then I was encouraging people, find somebody who lives somewhere else. Okay? Like last time, I don't know, somebody in Japan hooked up with somebody from Germany, and somebody from Buenos Aires hooked up with somebody from New York, and it was cool. And in the past 6 months, the poster has been taught in many cities. I like team teaching. I think it's nice. I think you might want to think about doing sort of an exchange program. You know, you could go up to Eric Streisand and say, I always wanted to teach in Hong Kong. You can invite yourself to Hong Kong, like I invite myself to Paris. And then... you can invite someone else to come to your city, you know, wherever you live. And I think it's a very, it can change the whole experience, okay? So I encourage you to, you have like till tomorrow afternoon, right? And then, you know, during meals especially, just hook up with somebody. Yeah, like Manila and Tokyo. Hong Kong. Manila and Hong Kong. Sorry, yeah, sorry. You know, or Paris and Kiev. Or, you know, something. Guadalajara. Yeah, yeah. Hola. You know. No, you could go to Suzanne's place and you could organize a little teaching together with somebody else in the class. And it's only a 2-hour flight, I think, Guadalajara. And then she could come with you to your place and you could have a class together. And it's really, really fun. And it's not scary at all. Like Hector used to think it was scary, I remember. And now he's like a star, pop star in New York. And and helped many, many people, you know, and really fun. It's just fun. So try it once, okay? Just pick on somebody, whoever you're eating your oatmeal with tomorrow, and then say, hey, you want to come to, you know, Poughkeepsie? And they're like, oh, I was hoping you were the guy from Paris. You know, but, you know, like that. Do it, okay? I ask you to do it, okay? Don't be shy. You can go to Tel Aviv, you know. It's beautiful. It's really fun. And then you just hook up. And then because there's two of you, it's not so much pressure, you know. The other guy will forget will remember what you forgot. Sometimes in the monastery, they put up a team of debaters, two guys. And then they tag team, you know, they'll be attacked by four guys or six guys. And then they help each other. And they, you know, so try, okay? At least one other person. You could do three also, something like that. But two is pretty easy. And then just do it, okay? Put up some posters around the yoga studios and, you know, some people ask me, what was your first class, Geshe-la? How many people came to your first class? The postman came to my door in New Jersey and he banged on the door, you know. I told this story and he's like, I thought, that's weird. Usually he only bangs on the door just before Christmas because you're supposed to give him it's basically a bribe. Sviatka? Sviatka. They taught me the word in Ukraine. Is it Sviatka? Sviatka. Yeah, yeah. So anyway, it's a big tradition. And so I'm like, you know, what can I do for you? Because if you don't pay the Christmas bribe, your mail's late all the time and he drops things. And so I'm like, can I help you? You know, you didn't get your envelope last December. You know? And he's like, no, I've been delivering your mail for a couple of years and you always get these weird letters from like Tibet and Nepal and India. And like, what do you guys do here? I was just curious what you guys do here, you know? And I said, you know, it's a little monastery and there's a big lama here in the next room and he teaches people. And he said, well, could you teach me? And I'm like, I don't know. I have to ask my teacher, you know? So I went in the next room to Kenma Bhajan and I said, you know, the postman wants a dharma. You know? And, So he said, teach him, you know. Then I said, I never taught anybody. He said, just teach him. You know, teach him what I taught you last week. Then I like go back out and I look at the guy and then I'm looking around. Then I went back to Rinpoche. I said, well, where am I supposed to teach him? We don't have any place. You know, he said, teach him in the car. Then I said, Rinpoche, you know, the car, we had a Beetle, you know. And I'm like, you know, And he's like, yeah, I'll teach him in the car. He can sit in the back and you sit in the front. You know? And he was always saying stuff like that. And then I'm like, you can't tell if he's joking or if he's serious. You know? One time he told this guy he came to the house for the first time, and there was a bunch of like 12 bananas on the table. And he said, the Rinpoche walked by and he said, Rinpoche. And Rinpoche's like, what? You know, and he says, what's the fastest way to enlightenment? And he says, you eat those 12 bananas. You know? And he ate them. So anyway, your first class is not going to be, you know, it's going to be probably better than the Beatles, but not much. Okay? So don't be shy. Don't be self-conscious about it. Just do it, you know, shamelessly. There's not enough doctors in town. There's a major shortage of doctors in town. There's a few doctors and they don't know what the hell they're doing, right? And then if you got the pen thing and you got this week, then you have enough to help somebody in a serious way, okay? So, I'm giving you that assignment. Hook up with somebody. It doesn't have to be some big glorious thing, you know? It can be, you can start in a coffee shop or something, you know? Just say, come and have coffee with us, and you can do it. Everybody can do it. All the teachers who taught this week, they started out like that. Okay, all right? So try it. It is the most satisfying way of life there is. You have your regular job, you have your family, and then, you know, like Hector, a couple of days a week he's teaching. And people love it, and it helps them very much in their life. Okay? In the hardships of their life. It's the bright moment in their week, you know? So do it, okay? Hook up with somebody. It's fun. Like, you know, you get to go somewhere and it's just fun. It's a lot of fun, okay? All right. Deyan Shelung Gitigin Duba Logya Gigitsuni. So now we're tracing a specific lineage, two specific lineages of the Great Fifth. The Great Fifth means the most famous of the Dalai Lamas. Basically, he united Tibet into a country. He started the Potala Palace. And up till now, he's been considered the greatest Dalai Lama. I think the current one is greater for many reasons. But anyway, the Great Fifth wrote a book called The Word of Gentle Voice, right? The Word of Gentle Voice, Manjushri. Then he apparently had written a longer version of that Lam Rim. And then he took it and he Tseltak. Tsel is a tree in India, in Tibet. It produces a red sap. There's a word for it in English. I don't remember. But it's called Tsel in Tibetan. And some of the scriptures were written in that ink. Some of the kangyurs, the ancient kangyurs, were written, they were printed in red ink, which is called the Tsel Parma. And so Tseltak means he highlighted the important parts of his own text. And then those were highlighted parts were taken out and made into a separate short Lam Rim. Okay? Papte, Lam Rim Dubashik Tunne. Tun means to extract, especially with herbs, to tun. So he tunned the essence of his bigger book and made a smaller book. Okay? Tende, papte, larmem dupa shikten. Then, it had special details that weren't contained in the other lineage that came down from the fifth Dalai Lama. So from the fifth Dalai Lama come down two lineages. One is called the southern lineage and one is called the central lineage. Southern Tibet and central Tibet. Two lineages came down. How? Why? Ami went to Hong Kong to teach with Eric, you know? And then Darcy went to Paris to teach with Cecile. And Already you got two lineages, okay? And then their students start teaching, and then their students start teaching, and naturally in Paris you emphasize something that you don't emphasize in Hong Kong, okay? Just depending on the audience. So there came to be two lineages from the fifth Dalai Lama. How did they differ? He gives three examples of the way in which the two practices of the Lamrim differ. It's a preview into what we're going to learn in the actual Lamrim, which is a lot of meditative practices, all right? A lot of these Lamrim, most of the Lamrim is practiced in your own head. They are attempts to change your view of the world and attempts to change your attitudes towards others, right? So there will be one way in which the two lineages diverged was in how they treated three different kinds of meditative practices, okay? Number one, Gyabyo. Gyabyo means how you visualize your own teacher as someone who will protect you, right? How you visualize your own teacher as someone who will protect you, right? And then you might visualize the physical dharma, like books, along with your teacher. And these are, in our belief, the physical things are not protection. You cannot get protection from a statue or from books. There's a famous story that Lord Buddha's village was attacked during his lifetime. People ran to his house thinking they could get protection. Some people hid under part of his robes and they were cut down. They were murdered holding on to him. So we don't believe that a physical statue or a book can protect you or even a person. The only thing that can protect you is your own understanding. Okay? In the case of, we were talking about what? The wife who criticizes you, the girlfriend who criticizes you all the time, right? Then protection is, what is protection? Your own understanding protects you, okay? How? They complain to you or they criticize you and then you think, I don't like this. I would like this to stop. And then because you understand how reality works, you determine not to criticize the person at work that you've been critical of, okay? Because you want to shut down the mental seeds which are causing your girlfriend to criticize you. That's, okay? That's taking refuge in Buddhism. Then it got out of hand. And as usual, the fundamentalists got a hold of it. And then they said, anybody who wants to be a Buddhist has to sit in front of a statue and say, you got to turn it over. Who had the bag? Anyway, I forget. It's like, yeah, okay, here, this is it. Buddha Sharanam Gacchami. Okay, Buddha Sharanam Gacchami. So this is probably from, I don't know, India or Sri Lanka? Sri Lanka. So, you know, you gotta have a Buddhist statue in your house or you're not a Buddhist. And then you gotta say, I believe in the Buddha three times a day or you're not a Buddhist. You see what I mean? Then they forgot it was relating to your wife, your girlfriend criticizing you. Right? This can't protect you. The bag can't do anything for you. Okay? No, really. The picture is not going to help you. The repeating the thing on the top 300 times is not going to do anything. It won't do anything, okay? It's understanding that protects you. Okay? You, if I respond to my girlfriend the way she's talking to me now, I will have to meet her again next week in the same mode. You see what I mean? So out of understanding, you stop the cycle. You cut the cycle. Okay. So how you visualize that or how you picture that in meditation is different in the southern and central lineages of the fifth Dalai Lama's teaching of the Lama. Okay? Second is called Sokshin. Sokshin means how do you picture the Lamas and the holy beings who have taught these things in the past, okay? And then if you're of low spiritual IQ, they give you a picture, a tanka, right? A scroll painting. And you unroll it and you say, this is Nagarjuna, this is Dharmakirti, you know, this is Tsongkhapa, bow down to this picture 3 times a day, everything will be okay. You know what I mean? And then as you go higher in the teachings, you can close your eyes and think of them, but you're not visualizing a picture. They are breathing. Their eyes are blinking. You can feel the warmth of their body, right? And then you listen to what they're telling you, and it's all about your girlfriend's criticism and how to stop it, right? That you have a personal experience of them, right? So that's Sokshin. I'm not going to teach you to meditate on a picture, okay? I want you to try to meditate on living creatures, living beings, who will then become real in your mind. And after that, they'll pop out and like come to your house and sit with you on the bed and teach you how to be like them. Okay? Really. Okay. So that's different between the two lineages. How you picture your teachers is different between the two lineages. They're both sweet, but they're different. Okay. Last thing, I say Chukang. Chukang. So there's this beautiful practice. I mean, I was sitting with Rinpoche one day and he says, let's do Chukang, you know? And I'm like, Rinpoche, I don't know how to do Chukang. And he gets a big silver bowl, you know? Then he gets a peacock feather. And then he gets some saffron water, you know? And then he has an old style mirror which was polished silver. Before they had glass mirrors, they would just polish silver, right? So he's got this polished silver mirror with a bunch of long silk scarves coming off, like rainbow colors, very beautiful. And then he's got his little bowl down there, you know. And then he takes this silver pitcher and he says, okay, Chukang time, you know. I'm like, what are you doing, Rinpoche? And he takes the peacock feather and he's like, you know, then he starts, and he starts reciting this thing. He says, and he's like a little kid with toy soldiers. You know, he says, look, there's Nagarjuna. We're going to bathe his body. You know, I'm like, what? And he's like, oh, it's so cool, you know. And then he's like, let's do his hair, you know. And then we'll do his arms, you know, and we'll wash his feet for him. And he's doing this whole beautiful thing with this peacock feather. And then the water, he pours water on it every once in a while and it pours off into the silver bowl. And then he keeps going, you know. He keeps washing all the lamas of the lineage, you know. And, oh, this one needs head and shoulders, you know. This one, you know. And he spends like half an hour on that, you know. And that's called Chukang. So Chukang means in your meditation, you bathe. You bathe, and then it was customary to massage your teacher. In those days, it was a custom to offer a massage of their body. Okay? And then you might wash their feet or something like that. And it sounds kind of corny, but it's a very comforting practice. It's a very beautiful practice to imagine your teacher and, you know, washing their holy body and serving them in that way. Very beautiful. There are even etiquette, what do you call it? Rules. Lama Ngapchupa, right? Guru Panchasika. It's the oldest book we have in Tibet after the Buddha. And it's a list of etiquette about your teacher. And then it tells you how to massage them, how you're supposed to bow down before you massage them, how you bow down after you massage them. And it was a spiritual practice. Okay. So those details differ from between the southern lineage and the central lineage. For example, so we're going to get to that later. All right. Ugyu dan mindawe menga dan chepa epa lama jamba rinchen la nang. So the fifth Dalai Lama passed it down to a lama called Epa Lama, Jampa Rinchen. De simja kenchen losang ketun la nang. He passed it down to, okay, now it's getting boring, okay, sorry. He passed it down to Simsha Kenchen Losang Ketsun. Di kyunab gitsel chewe tsel tak papluk la ge dun natso shi tuk la sharwe tuk tok ma chupa chuddi dapo ngapa chambola rana shugone kundun randu mu jelki jacho chiki yuna. Then this last lama, he saw the extracted version, and he started to wonder what the full version looked like. Okay, and then he actually barged his way into the fifth Dalai Lama's throne room and asked him, could you give me the whole thing? Okay, which is very weird. Kundun rangi mune jaki jajor chiki yuna, in the time it took to have one Tibetan tea together, he got the whole thing. Okay, somehow the fifth Dalai Lama passed on the whole thing to him. All right, well, by the way, we're talking southern lineage now. Okay. He became the abbot of Tsepotala, which is the Tibetan word for the Potala Palace. Okay, they call it Tsepotala. Okay, Sope Kembodze. Kwitse mela enne lamem chiding sudupala shulwe jupe goban tumbashek. In the latter part of his life, he was able to reach a high state of realization by studying this Lamrim that he had been granted by the fifth Dalai Lama. De Yerpe Dubchen Punso Gyatso La Nang. Then that Lama gave it to somebody named Yerpe Dubchen Punso Gyatso. De Yang Nonchi Dawa Sim La Zoba Tse. That Lama used to give Lamrim retreats that lasted for 3 months. Shilaki Dopa Kepa Chen Tugyu La Tumba. Then he got to high states of realization on the Shine and Hakdong, emptiness and high states of meditation. Gyula Tune Yerpa Lopa Mambo Na Nong Chi Ki Kyang. Then he taught his own students in his home place called Yerpa by Nyongchi. What's Nyongchi? Do you remember? Nyongchi. Nyongchi means you don't just read it from the book. You say, okay, last year I was meditating on emptiness, and here's what I saw. So the whole instruction is based on the person's personal, his or her actual realizations. Decho lukyu ki gone drupa tukte, tlogu ki lama pelche wa la deta yinsung. Then he practiced the body mandala of Decho, Sambara, Heruka. Okay, that's a special practice where you visualize an entire enlightened world inside your body. Okay, and then he reached his spiritual goals by practicing that. Okay, those of you who had Vajrayogini have had that practice. Okay, most of the lamas of the southern lineage had similar experiences. Okay. De A Lama Kachit Tendar La Nang. He taught A Lama, called A Lama, Kachit Tendar. His name was Kachari. The name of Vajrayogini is heaven, right? De Kenchen Genden Jamyang La Nang. He taught a Lama named Kenchen Genden Jamyang. De Logi Shalun Geba Dak Pap Gyuma Dak Gyun Jamchun Dok Le Tsen Lok Su Yepa Di Kupan Ze. He was a little bit worried that people were doing highlights of the highlights and highlights of the highlights of the highlights, and then he decided maybe we should standardize this particular text, and he helped to standardize it. Ding ar chima le me kyang kyabje dubkan rimboche ne padu tun nang te. In the past, it had always been a written manuscript, and then at that point, someone had it carved, which helped prevent corruption. In India, they couldn't do carving because of the weather. And in Tibet, you can take a block of butter and leave it outside for a year, and nothing will happen. Because there's no, what do you call it? Until recently, there have been no microbes there. It's so high, it's so cold, and so clean that things didn't spoil. And so we had a printing of the Tengyur ordered from Derge. I bribed the Chinese officials of Derge, and we got a whole thing here, 210 volumes, shipped out to Delhi, long ago, from the original blocks. These are 1700. The blocks were made in 1700, and they still look the same. They haven't changed because of the weather. Okay, so they carved it. Kenshin Genden Jamyang Ngawan Tuto Banang. Somebody named Kenshin Genden Jamyang granted it to Ngawan Tuto. De Dak Cha Kenshin Tenpa Gyatso Banang. By the way, Pabongkul Rinpoche loves to trace his lineages. There's whole books of his lineages in the database. Okay. De Dakchar Lob Nier Kap Shun Chalki Shing Shak Tu Ume Tawa Nier Pasum. So that's something I wanted to talk about. It is said that one day, while he was chopping wood, he came to an understanding of the middle way. Okay? He understood the middle way. Then you get into all these things about, it's called Satori, right? Like somebody's out sweeping the porch, and suddenly they have an insight into emptiness. Okay? And then there's, I think we have to talk about that, okay? Because here it came up. Somebody was out chopping wood and they had an insight into emptiness, okay? And then because people haven't had that experience, then there start to be weird ideas about what's possible and what's not possible, okay? So I think we should talk about it. It's not possible to see ultimate reality chopping wood. It's not possible, okay? You have to be in a deep state of meditation. You have to be in such a deep state of meditation that if someone came up to you with a bag of McDonald's French fries and put it under your nose, you couldn't smell it. Your sense organs are completely withdrawn. So you can't be chopping wood, you would cut your fingers off. Okay? Your sense organs have to be completely withdrawn and on to a higher level. We call form realm. So you have to be in a seated meditation position. It doesn't have to be a full lotus, but it's not possible to see emptiness under any other circumstances. It just won't happen. Which means if you're not meditating about an hour a day, it's not possible to see emptiness. It won't happen. It can't happen. Okay? Do you have to do it all at the same time? No. Because then you'll be wandering around for 45, 50 minutes. Okay? I would suggest breaking it up, but you have to be meditating regularly if you want to see emptiness. If you don't see emptiness, you can never get enlightened and you can't reach nirvana either. You can't stop even your anger or your jealousy or other, not possible. Okay? So you have to try. You have to try to get there. So I thought we should clarify that. So where do you think happened? What kind of insight did he have? I think you could call Dorlam, right? Second path. What is Dorlam? You have intellectual insights into ultimate reality, okay? I'll give you an example. Point to something in this room that is not coming from you. Just point to anything in this room which is not coming from how you have treated other people in the past, right? And then if you're well-trained, you say, you know, there's nothing, okay? Nothing in the room. Not me, not you, not your mind, not the person next to you. It's all coming from you, okay? You just had an insight into emptiness, okay? And you weren't even chopping wood. All right? So it happens. He probably had the pot on the stove experience. It probably he saw emptiness within the next day or so. But he didn't see emptiness chopping wood. Not possible. Okay? I thought we'd take a break, but I want to make a pitch first, okay? So we put up these paintings around the room. Over there, there's a bell tower. What is that, a gladiolus? It's like a Martian gladiolus taking over the bell tower. And over there is it's like a Spanish mission-style building, right? And then I like the clouds. Then over there is it's a different rendering of the same building. And then over there is the I don't know, some Spanish archways or things like that, okay? So like, we're designing a community center that we would like to build in Phoenix. It's like my next thing that I'd like to do in my life, okay? So we did the New York thing. The Three Jewels is going well for, I don't know, 15 years now, 20 years. We did the Diamond Mountain thing. We paid it off last November. There's no more challenges there. They built 30 cabins. They're done. We actually fixed the water system. So then I was thinking, personally, I have this dream to... I was in Guadalajara, right? Lake Chapala or Chalapa? I can never remember. Chapala. We were at Lake Chapala. And one night we, what do you call it? We were supposed to walk from the restaurant to the teaching room. But it got too late because the restaurant only made food for 30 people and we brought 60. And nobody told, I didn't tell them. That caused a little problem. But so one night we were like 3 hours later, we're all just eating, you know. And then I said, well, I don't think we can walk up to the... It was a little bit of a hike to the teaching room. Then this guy named Alejandro, Julian, which is her boy, he's in charge of the retreat. He's a beautiful man. He said, Gisela, why don't you just sit down on the couch and teach, you know? And there's a fire and there was a couch, you know. And so we just all got around the couch and it was kind of cool. At the edge of the lake, which is the largest lake in Mexico. Yeah, you can't see the end of it. It's beautiful. So then we're sitting there, and I don't know, we got to thinking about this grand scheme that we would like to create a new political entity called, I don't know, it's going to be called Aramex or something. And it would be a cultural state that overlapped the Mexican-American border. So here's the Mexican-American border. And then this new state would go up to, it would start down by Puerto Vallarta, and it would go up through Nogales, etc., Agua Prieta, up to Phoenix. And then maybe we'll let El Paso and Los Angeles join. I'm not sure yet. Okay. But then we were thinking, what if we just ignored the border? And what if we decided that we would be a cultural entity, and then we would have teachings, and we would do exhibitions of paintings and music, and do plays together, and things like that, theater, and then they would come here, and we would do stuff together, and then we would go there, and it would just be like, we would ignore all these problems, that are, especially in Arizona, where now if you look Mexican, you can be stopped at will, and they can demand to see your passport, and if you don't have your passport on you, you can get deported, even if you've lived here for 10 generations, and it's really bad. Then I was in Barcelona a couple years ago, and I was walking down the street one night, and I stopped in front of a bookstore, and there's all Don Quixote's, you know, Don Quixote books, all over the, in all the windows full of Don Quixote books, you know, and then there's two Spanish guys standing looking at the books, and they're like, you know, and they look like flamenco dancers, you know, and they're like, you know, and I think they were bragging about Don Quixote or something, you know, and then it struck me that I grew up in Arizona, and I grew up, where I grew up, there was a Mexican-American neighborhood next to me, and we never went there. We never went inside that neighborhood. So that neighborhood was like, I don't know, what do you call it? What do you call it when you ignore somebody very unkindly? They were pariahs. We'd never talked to those kids. We never did anything with those kids. And we absolutely never went into their neighborhood. And then that's how I was brought up. And then those kids always came to school hanging their heads down. And if they spoke Spanish to each other, they had to like go outside. And if someone caught them speaking Spanish, they would feel like they had been stealing money or something. You know, they looked really bad, you know? And then that was the culture that I grew up in. And it's still there, you know? A man goes into the grocery store, Safeway, with his wife, and they're trying to pick out Anaheim chilies, and they can't speak Spanish because people will look at them like they're uneducated or something like that. Then I'm in thinking about the guys in Barcelona, you know, who have this look about them of pride and beauty and nobility, you know. And then I'm thinking of my friends in Arizona, and they're like, I was in the car with a guy, a Mexican guy, and we went by a police car, and he actually ducked, you know. And I'm like, sit up, you know. And he's like, I can't, you know, we'll get stopped, you know. And I'm like, so I would really like to make a, I think as citizens, it's important to, what do you call it? We can't try to convince the government to be reasonable. I think we just have to be, what do you call it? Proactive. And I would like to build a place. That's my next thing. I would like to build a place where we could serve and learn from the Mexican American community. Documented or undocumented, I don't care. And then get them out of this, what do you call it, low self-esteem trap thing. Because then they eat poorly, because they think they look bad. And then they look worse, you know. And then they eat more because they're unhappy. And then, so I thought maybe we would try to build a community center on the edge of a barrio. Barrio is like a poor neighborhood in Phoenix. And then I thought if we found a place that had, what do you call it, a middle class on the other side, like maybe if we taught yoga and meditation, then we could attract the middle class people, basically white people, and then we could attract the Mexican American people, and then maybe they would get to know each other, and then there's gangs in Phoenix, there's a lot of gangs, and then if we'd been teaching in the prison, Jeff Eddy, Christine Walsh, Jigme, they've been teaching a lot in the prison. There's a whole culture of Spanish American people there. You make one mistake on the outside, if you're Mexican American, you get 10 years, you get 15 years. And they're teaching them. And they're doing a nice job. We had a, what do you call it? Christine Garza, Tina Garza came to the last teaching in Phoenix with her hair, like a new haircut, you know. And I'm like, that's cool, Tina. Where'd you get the haircut? She said, it's funny you ask, because there was a native guy running a hair salon in Scottsdale, and he says he knows you, you know. And I'm like, from where, you know? And he says you taught him in the prison in Douglas. He was in for like 10 or 15 years. And he says you used to come to the prison and teach them, you know. And I said, yeah, I remember this guy, you know. And then now he's out and he's teaching meditation. And he owns an exclusive salon in Scottsdale. And, you know, that's my dream, you know. My dream is to do stuff like that. I'd really like to get the Mexican-American community hooked up with China. I think Taiwan and China. I think it would be a dream of mine if we could have exchange students to Taipei or Shanghai and teach the Mexican-American kids business. The only people left in the world who know anything about business are in Taiwan and China. And I would like to have exchange programs where they learn how to speak Chinese. And maybe we could have some Chinese cultural programs in the Spanish American communities, you know, and because that's the future for young people. If you could learn to do business in China, you would have a future, you know. So anyway, that's my dream for, I kind of would like to build a place like that. We would like to make it super green. We'd like to use Adobe that we invented at Diamond Mountain, right? And instead of using hay, you use, instead of straw, you use garbage newspapers. And then we have a special machine that Kat invented from old axles, from junk cars. And you drag it behind your car, and it mixes the Adobe for free. So the dirt is free, the newspapers are free, and the water, I don't know, you got to pay for the water. The labor is another question, which is why I'm talking about this to you. So we have a dream. I hired a young artist, very talented, probably runs in his family. And then he executed these. And then he has four more he's going to finish by the end of the month. And then we thought to take these posters to... we have a big tour of China, and then we have a big tour of Taiwan. And I'm going to try to raise the funds for it, okay? We found a nice bombed-out section of Phoenix. It's really perfectly desolate. It was 3 or 4 miles of car lots that have all gone bankrupt. So there are huge barbed wire fences and sprinkled liberally with glass bottles and needles and condoms and, you know, perfect place for us. You know, people are always asking me, why didn't you choose this place, Geshe-la? I said, you got to pick the place where you can do the most good, right? Like, Paris doesn't need this, right? I mean, it's already beautiful. I mean, you got to go to somewhere that's... You should teach people who are having a hard time, like Kiev or like Sofia. And then you should, in your own country, you should help people who are having a hard time, and not just all the white kids from Scottsdale, you know. You should help the people who need help more, right? So anyway, that's my dream. I don't have time to do it because I'm traveling all the time. So I told Rob he had to do it. Haggerty. So there's this famous incident in... later. At the opening. Now there's this famous incident with... you know, Ken Rinpoche came from Gyume Tantra College, right? One of the two Tantra colleges of Tibet. So Tsongkhapa was standing around with some of his students, and he said, I want someone to build Gyume Tantra College. I want a Tantra College. And then everybody was like, gee, I'm pretty busy, Tsongkhapa, you know. And then there was one, Chanju Bumba, I think. Anyway, he was foolish enough to say, he was embarrassed. He was embarrassed that nobody else would do it. So he said, I'll take care of it, Tsongkhapa. Don't worry about it. Just relax. You know, next time you come back to the city, it'll be there. And it was. And he did it. So I'm putting you under the same pressure, okay? Then he needs help, okay? Then I was thinking, like just the team that did the mandala, last night? That was so awesome, you know? And I think we have people in this group who can do everything, you know? We have the talent. We have the talent to do everything in just this group, you know? Everybody could do something. And he needs help, okay? He's going to need help. We've already rented a house, a beautiful historical house, stone house in the neighborhood. We've already started having classes there. Rebecca's teaching once, twice a week. There's already an AA meeting every Monday night. And Anatole and Adriana are going to start teaching there, but they don't know that yet. And it's going, okay? And then that'll be like a staging point to take care of the building the place. So basically we've negotiating the city of... There's a suburb of Phoenix called Glendale. We chose this place because south of that, it's a disaster. I counted 15 trailer parks on one street, okay? And then north of that, it gets sweeter and sweeter until you hit Christine Walsh's house. And no, I mean, it's upper middle class. So I think we'll work there on the border, okay? And it's a beautiful, desolate, worthless place. And we want to build the building. There will be gardens there. There will be a sanctuary for 500 people. There will be fountains. It'll be Spanish style. Outside of the building itself, We will help start the custom of reclaiming urban land for farming, which is the future of America, okay? There's a 60% unoccupied office space in Phoenix. 60% of the office spaces in Phoenix are unoccupied. They will never be occupied. You don't need them anymore. Why travel to work for an hour and use up the last of the world's oil if you can work from home on the internet? So those places will never be occupied. And slowly they will figure it out and tear them down. They've been unoccupied now for, I don't know, 5 years. And it's sad. It looks like a ghost town. These huge, beautiful office buildings. Even on Camelback. Camelback? Before you get to the, in the 40s. Like high-end stuff. They're empty. All those banking buildings are empty. And no one, they're never gonna be filled. And, so I think we kind of have to set the, what do you call? Help set the precedent. They're already doing some in Detroit, some of our friends in Detroit, some in Chicago. They tear up the asphalt. They reclaim the soil. They, what do you call? Amend the soil. And then they start planting crops. And then in Detroit and Chicago, our friends, they give the vegetables to the local school district. And the kids get fresh vegetables for lunch. And you see, it could be a whole cool thing. And then we thought we could just make our own adobes there, hire gang kids from the barrio. I figure if they help make the adobe, they won't scrawl things on the building. But like that, you see what I mean? And then that becomes a refuge for people. It'll have English classes, computer classes, Chinese classes, business classes, DCI, you know, how to make money by giving money away. Then it, of course it's gonna have a Starbucks inside. We're trying to get a space that's big enough. We're trying to buy 12 acres of auto lots, used auto lots. They're all contiguous. There's a block there. There's a big, huge block. A lot of you have already seen it. Our friends came up from Guadalajara. A big group came last July and from Mexico City. And we walked the property, and it's a good price. And so I have to raise the money. I'll try to raise the money in Taiwan. I'm asking you if you will help work at whatever you know how to do. Okay, so we just need people to help Rob. There's a few things he might need help with. I don't know. But mainly I want your time. Okay, I can get money, I think, from Asia. And you know, we can. I would like to build a kind of as a tribute to my own teacher. I would like to build a place that is, what do you call it? Very beautiful. Like I kind of like the Taj Mahal, but it's a little too fancy for me. But I would like to build something that's what do you call it? People will come just to see the gardens, and people will come just to see the, you know, the architecture. So I would like to make a memorable building, which nobody does in America anymore. They just build the cheapest thing they can because Americans are all bankrupt. And I would like to take the time, make the blocks ourselves, and make something of great beauty as a monument to these higher teachings and higher ideas. I think it should be, and that it's, what do you call it, green, super green. You know, like the cabins in Diamond Mountain where the kids are doing retreat, those expensive kids. They don't have electricity. They're not hooked up to the grid at all. They're all solar. And they have no sewer. They're all working on new compost toilets. And they call them fly farms down there, but it's okay. But I would like to make it like a super green building that's a monument of beauty to our teacher, okay? Like our teachers, right? Clear. So that's all. If you'd like to help with that project, if you have any skills at all, okay? Everybody can lift a shovel mostly. But if you have any more exotic skills, please talk to Rob Haggerty. Do you have anybody else you want? Just Christine Walsh, I thought? To take names and stuff? Okay, well, Christine and Rob and Becky, whoever you trust the most. Give them your name and your email if you want to help, okay? You can come for a month and help. You can come for 10 years and help, you know? If you can help me fundraise, that's good too. I think, you know, what we did at Diamond Mountain, the property was $1.2 million, I think. And we don't charge any tuition. We don't have any income at Diamond Mountain. There's no income. So we did this karma trick, you know. We did this big karma trick. Whatever income we had, we split it with some competing retreat center every month, you know. Every month we give $1,000 to some retreat center that's competing with Diamond Mountain. And we never stopped. And we paid the mortgage off 25 years early. Last November, okay, and the bank was like, you know, everybody else is losing their property. Like, how did you get the money, you know? And we're like, we don't charge anything. We have no income. And they're like, well, how did you do that, you know? And we said, just little people, you know. We just got, it was like Obama's election, you know. Like, we just got tons of little people, and they all give like $1 a day or $2 a day, and. And we paid it off, and it's finished, you know. So anyway, think about it. I would appreciate it personally. I don't have time to do it myself. I probably don't have time to be there very often. I need other people to take it, you know. I figured the design team on the mandala was pretty impressive. I want it to be beautiful. I don't want a single cinder block there, and I don't want any single square foot that isn't beautiful. And has some kind of beautiful plant running down it, or isn't special. You know, I would like it to be special. Everything about it, like really exquisite and beautiful. Like a monument to one's teacher, right? So think about that, okay? That's all. I want you to help, okay? Help him. I'm sticking it on him. I'll take these four paintings and whichever one other ones are done by then. And to Taiwan, and I'll try to get some money together. But then I need help. We need help. He needs help, not me. Okay? All right? And then it's going to be cool because we can all hang out together there. And, you know, it'll be a great fun. It's fun to do something big with your life, you know? Okay? It's fun to say, I built that thing. You know? It's really fun. It makes you feel so cool. Alright. Do something big in your life. Okay? Yeah. And then we'll help a lot of people. Right? We'll enfranchise the disenfranchised. Okay? Okay? Alright. Have a nice break. Talk to Rob if you can help. And we'll come back in about 10 minutes or something. Okay? Thank you. Okay, we'll do a long 10 minutes. So we're continuing with the southern lineage of the fifth Dalai Lama, Salamrim, and I promise it will end soon. De Seto Lama Kelden Lanang. He taught it to Seto Lama Kelden Lanang. Then I think Pabongkor Rinpoche was trying to pep things up and he started telling stories about some of the lamas. So here we go. This particular Lama, Seto Lama Kelden, people used to give him gifts of gold, silver coins, and what do you call it? Bolts of silver, bolts of silk, okay? Dar Nambu. So, Buken Khan Jun Zincha Kyang Mitze. He didn't get attached to them. Don't worry, Yang Min Zepa. neither did he give them away. Okay, the gifts he got. He found nearby like a cliff with a big boulder near it, and that the boulder had a fissure down the middle of it, and he would throw all the stuff down there. Okay? All right? And it's interesting, you see, there's a bodhisattva vow what? If somebody offers you a gift as a teacher, you have to accept it gracefully, okay? And you have to try to see some beauty in it and use it and think about it. And I remember when His Holiness came to our temple, and then there was this crazy lady who used to come around. She was kind of like pretty crazy. And then we were hoping she wouldn't come that day, but she came. And then His Holiness's assistant at the time was Dobum Toku, who I knew from my studies in India. So she came up to me and she said, I have a gift for the Dalai Lama and you have to make sure he gets it, you know. And I'm like, you know, as if I'm going to get within 100 feet of him. And then she gives me this plaster of Paris American Eagle, you know. And so I'm like, okay, I'll make sure it gets to him, you know. And then I went to Dobum Rinpoche. I said, look, Rinpoche, there's this lady, you know, I made a promise that His Holiness has to get this plaster Paris American Eagle, you know. It wasn't even painted or anything. And he said, okay, I'll try to get it to him, you know. And then His Holiness did a big ceremony. He did this long life ceremony in the temple, you know. It was very beautiful. And then at the end, he says, and I would like to present the temple with a gift. And then all the Mongolians are like, oh, thank you, you know. And it's still hanging there, I think so. So anyway, if you're going to get rid of them, throw them in off a cliff or something, okay? After several generations, people found the stuff at the bottom of this boulder, right? And they made off with the coins. The silver coins were still intact, but the silk was all, you know, rotten. So actually, we're not supposed to refuse a gift, right? And then he wants to justify why, he wants to explain the situation more carefully. And he says, the reason he didn't pass these gifts on was that he was afraid that by receiving them and by passing them on, he would start to get a big head and think he was a big teacher. See what I mean? So he was protecting his own mind by throwing away the offerings. Okay? Nomsam kiri nimi la gomare. De je losan chumpela nang. He granted the lineage to je losan chumpela. De gewe shenyam tupten rabge la nang. He passed it on to geshe tupten rabge. De tutan kab lam rim sun deb la dang tang ne sung je jam chager shuk. This particular lama, when he would do the, what do you call it? Supplication to the lamas of the lam rim lineage, okay? This is a prayer that we do. You, gyawa gyasa dhrita 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 gyawa yamta dhrita namo yasa dhu anoda dhrita sun deb sun. You do it as fast as you can. Lam rim sun deb dang tang ne, after he had sung it, one day he just stopped moving. And then everybody was worried about him. Then some people said he probably fell asleep. Then they tried to wake him up, and then they realized he was in meditation on the lamas of the lama. Okay. Gomba Shuktam. De Gelung Chanju Togme Chepanang. He passed it on to a monk named Gelung Chanju Togme. Okay. De Geshe Dan Lama Sokayam Mimbar. He wasn't a Geshe and he wasn't a reincarnated Lama. Lama in the monastery means Tuku. When you say lama in the monastery, it means tuku. He was neither a geshe or nor a tuku. He was a, we call, say daba. Say daba.
Daba.
Dakyan.
Daba
dakyan. It means a monk who is a monk who is just a monk. Daba dakyan. And when His Holiness the Dalai Lama says, I'm just a simple monk, that's what he's thinking in his head. He's thinking Daba Dakyan. It means I'm just a, you know, I'm a little monk who stays in a little cell and I have a little tiny bed and I have two sets of clothes and that's all I am. That means Daba Dakyan. Okay? He wasn't a geshe, he wasn't a big tuku, he was a Daba Dakyan. Rangawa Shigyan, just some guy. Dang Ri Ritu de Shugne, he used to stay in a hermitage called Dang Ri Ritu. Then every day he would walk down to a meadow, like the meadow down there, which I haven't seen because they don't let me out of my house. Chungushi Yubar Sungtor Nangje. Then he used to go down there and make an offering of a torma. So we did tormas last night. Those are the little cone head guys. Okay, Lamrim la tukdam sechik deze. And then he would go into meditation on the Lamrim in the meadow. He would walk down to the meadow, make a torma offering to the local spirits. These are tortured local spirits. And if you make the offering with the correct state of mind, they are capable of taking some sustenance from it. Otherwise, they'd never find anything. Okay. So if you could see them, it would be like moths to a flame. It would be covered with spirits. One of those little tormas last night would have been covered with spirits, taking little sustenance from it. Okay, like, I don't know, piled on top of each other like that. Jam Ningje Tugila Tumbe. Then he was able to have the vision of a perfect world, you know? Like, he could see how it could happen. I like to tell this story. I was in Guangzhou, which is South China. It's just outside of the Hong Kong border. Probably 75% of the world's goods are made in that area, Shenzhen and Guangzhou, and maybe a little bit in Zhuhai. But probably the rug you're sitting on, the paneling, the lights, the cars, the parts for the cars, you know, the sound system, the tablecloth, these are all made in Guangzhou. It's the world's manufacturer. And, you know, it employs millions of people. And it stretches for 50 miles, back-to-back factories. And then Shenzhen was an empty field, I think, 10 years ago. 12 years ago, 30 years ago, then Deng Xiaoping decided to try to make factories there, and now it's 12 million people. And it looks like Harrison Ford's, that science fiction movie, Blade Runner. It looks like Blade Runner now. I mean, it's unbelievable. It was empty fields, okay? So anyway, we're giving a talk in Guangzhou. Then, you know, I have to stick to making money and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then, I don't know, for 2 days I taught them that you can be more prosperous, your business can be more prosperous if you help other people become more prosperous. You know, that was my whole thing, and I taught them the pen thing, and they understood the seed thing, and they all got it. They're very sharp. They're smart people, and they ask great questions. So they were all like asking great questions. And sometimes when you're teaching, you will see a moment. A moment will offer itself. You know, like this thing stops, and then you know you have like 45 seconds before the next thing can start. You see a opportunity. So then I was just like, well, you all understand now how to make money. And they're like, yeah. And I said, well, how do you make money? And they said, you help other people make money. And then I'm like, and these are all people, they grew up in very hard times. They grew up in a very hard brutal system, you know? So they've had no spiritual training. It was illegal for 50 years, and they don't have any exposure. You can ask them, do they sell Heart Sutras in this town? And they just look at you. They don't even know the names of the books, you know? And you can't get I tried to get books there, and they're like 1 out of 100 people knows what you're talking about. You know, it's been wiped out. So then I kind of innocently say, well, okay, what would happen if everybody in the world believed that this was how to make money? And then I told you, right? There's this thing going on in their mind, and then they just got it, right? That vision of a world where people thought that the only way to succeed would be to help make others succeed. And they got it. And you could see bodhicitta spread in the minds of a couple hundred people who had never had any spiritual training at all. They don't have churches. They don't have temples. I mean, it's not, they have, what do you call them? Historical sites, but there's no working at that. There hasn't been any working temples. They're not aware of any spiritual teachings. And then suddenly in the room, everybody's got bodhicitta clicking in the room. Okay. So that monk, he would make his torma offering, and then he would sit down and he would think about these things. Like, what would happen in the world if everybody believed that everything was coming from them? You know, and then he got it. It hit him, and then he would start to weep in the meadow. He would just sit by himself in the meadow and weep for like an hour. You know, Kona Zepa Lungzi Chipe. There was a boy. What do you call sheep? Sheep herder. Lungzi means sheep herder. Tony, oh, that's so strange. An old man by himself weeping in the middle of a meadow for an hour, you know? And then he came back the next day and found him doing the same thing. And then every day he would come back and here's this old man in the middle of the field just crying to himself, okay? And it's a beautiful story, you know? So that's this, one of the southern lineage guys. Temotawa on. De du shalung ho gyuki chi gyung geno di chipula mato mi shupe. At that time, something strange happened. That monk was the last one who had the lineage transmission of the southern lineage. Okay? He was the last. It got down to one monk who knew the southern lineage. He was the last one who was taught the southern lineage. Chepa Nirwana, Dakja Cancer Losan Jimba She Daki Kyapcha Lama Rimba Che Rabjungi Domba She Sa De. Then the monk with whom my own teacher took his first vows, monk's vows, okay? So the monk who granted Pabongkum Rinpoche's teacher his first monk vows, Hlogyuki Chigyen Shendu Shibdu Tselkyang Chigyen Topa Gelon Dine Mepe. He was thinking it would be important for him to learn the southern lineage, but then he came to understand that there was only this one monk left, okay? He could only find one monk who still had the transmission. Gelong ki namchi matup kyang chi gyen sam ma shuna chepa dogne. He thought to himself, this old monk wouldn't be able to give me a proper transmission of the technical part of the lamrim. Like, he's just an old, he's not a geshe, he's just an old drabadakyan, okay? And he thought to himself, well, he probably can't give me a proper teaching, but if I could ask him just to read it to me, I would get the oral transmission. And then it wouldn't die in the world. At least the oral transmission could survive, even if the old man doesn't know what he's talking about. Chepa donne ninchi gelon dan jelzom kap. So he went to the monk and he met him one day. Dacha shalung hogyoki chugin shupa nine me. You are the last monk who has the transmission of the southern lineage. It would be a big loss in the world if the lineage were to be, what do you call it? They say cut. In Tibetan, they say cut. If it stopped. Yeah, okay? Could give me an oral
transmission of content.
It means he reads
the fifth Dalai Lama to him with no explanation because he's not capable of it. Okay? Lan le ne lung riki gyente yebar par pu chok shubar. And then I will explain to you what it means. You know? So he's talking to the old man. You know, you give me you read the text to me so the lineage is not broken, the oral transmission. And then I'll enlighten you as to its meaning. Gelonggi daktabu kalabu nu she nangmin nu ki kuze. Then the old man said, you know, who am I to give anybody an oral lineage? You know, I'm just a dumb old monk, you know. Kyang, jesu nangwe kap menga sabla dilwa nyong tok bashing ne nangwe. But then he agreed to do it. And he started off, and then he started to teach the Lamrim to him. Mengak sab, extraordinarily profound teachings on the Lamrim. Nyong tok, and only based on his own personal realizations. You know, bashing ne nangwe. J. Losan Jimba Halepa, the monk who received it, Hale. Wow. Okay. He was amazed. He was like, wow. You know, Hale Zetsu de Nye Kona Par Bugu Yin Shupa Ngotarduk. Now I'm ashamed that I offered to enlighten him as to the meaning. Okay? Monastic Geshe, he's a Kadampa Geshe. See, the modern Geshe is a title, it's a degree. The old Geshe was like a master of personal experience, right? They weren't handing out degrees. You came to be a Geshe from your realizations, okay? Chambore ngakchudze, je losang chemba yang shilaki tingsin kipachen nyeching. This Lama came to have high realizations, the younger one who got the transmission. He also practiced the body mandala and reached a high stage of realizations. He lived at a monastery called Bangrim in a place called Dagme. I think we stopped there. It goes on and on. Okay, I'm required to do this, okay? At least you get some fun stories. All right. Okay. We're doing good. I think we can finish tomorrow. This is the 10th class. Okay. Miriam, you up for that? Okay. Have a good sleep.